Jamie, a podcast where me, Nicole Byer, tries to figure out how she's still single, even though you could come in the charging port of my phone, clog it all up, say, "I'll never clean it, dummy." And I would say, "Well, I guess that's how my phone is now." My guest today is a hilarious comedian and actor who captured the hearts of America on season 10 of America's Got Talent, where he finished in second place. His hour stand-up special, Concussed, can be streamed on YouTube. I am joined by the wonderful, incredible, Drew Lynch! Ba beep ba boop ba ba dee 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 doop boop.
Thank you, Nicole. I'm so glad you included the cum part, too, in the beginning.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. You know, you gotta keep it nasty.
Well, that's part of all my intros, but I'm just so glad you said it.
How are you?
It's good. I'm so glad that we finally got to do this.
Me too.
You're busy. You're so busy. So it's really cool to see how busy you are and see that you're losing your mind at the same time.
Oh, the mind has been lost. It's long gone. Are you traveling right now?
Yeah, I'm in Hawaii right now. And that's what took us so long for the setup. That she was like, "Do you have this?" And I was like, "No, I normally travel with that, but I don't have that." And literally, the microphone that I'm using from my fiance's phone is balanced on fucking protein powder right now, because that's the thing that was closest to my mouth. So
I thought that was a jar of mayonnaise, and I was trying so hard not to fucking judge you. I was like, "Damn. He really likes mayonnaise like that."
Yeah. Well, the cum was, we have that cum intro, and so I want that synthetic, good
that
fat
synthetic
cum.
Synthetic cum that people glop onto sandwiches. I mean, mayonnaise, yeah, if it hits a little bit of water, it does look a little cummy.
I feel like mayonnaise is absolutely disgusting. I don't understand it as a condiment when there's like mustard. Like, there's like mustard isn't even just mustard. Like, mustard has got like different portfolios of it, you know, like there's like,
sure, there's grape poupon, yellow,
I don't even
mustard
know that. See, that's what I'm saying.
I'm not a mustard gal. I ordered french fries at this movie theater I was at, and I asked for ranch, but what I got was honey mustard, and I dipped my french fry in it, and it was dark. I had no clue. I put it in my mouth. I was so devastated. I truly was so fucking angry. I couldn't believe it. I saw the Batman. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. Is it great?
Drew,
is it so good?
3 hours, and I loved every second of it. And I do not like superhero movies.
Oh my god! I'm usually not crazy about them because all of them are fucking 3 hours. And
yes,
I'm a human being that has things to do. But if you can keep your attention for 3 hours, then I'll for sure go see it.
I looked at my phone maybe 3 times, and then.
Wow.
Halfway through the movie, realized I left my keys in my car, but I was like, it's been an hour and a half. If someone's going to steal my car, it's probably already done. Turns out, spoiler, nobody stole my car, which is very nice.
Your life is chaotic, dude. You stress me out. Every single time you talk about the way you live, I'm an old soul, and you're just like, I'm in the moment, and oh my God, it stresses me out, dude.
I'm so sorry. Well, I also got to the movie 10 minutes late and then had to sit in the front row. But the seats reclined, so, you know, my neck wasn't broken. And then ordered food. It was all wrong. And then truly midway through, an hour and a half into the movie, I was like, don't have my keys. But I was like, am I going to go all the way back out to my car? No, I'm going to watch the movie. Whatever happens, happens.
Oh, my God.
And I truly walked to my car being like, it might not be here. Someone may have opened the door and been like, oh, these are the fucking keys to this car. Beep, beep.
Which is only something that happens in the movies.
Yes. And it didn't happen. It's happened before. You've never left your keys in the car and gone and lived your life.
No, no. I check all my pockets and make sure they're uncomfortably bulged to where people are gonna be like, what does he have, like fucking snacks in his shorts? Like, that's because and I do the same pat every time. I pat like the front. Okay, I was like, okay, wallet's in the front left, phone is in the keys in the front right, and then fucking phone in the back, and then chapstick in the back. That's That's my thing. I do that. But when I leave my, before I leave my house, right after I've locked the house, okay. And then when I get in the car, and then when I've left, and then when I'm on stage, I'll do it several times on stage. When I, you know that stool when you're on stage? Mm-hmm. I stack that thing with personal items from my home. There, that's how I know. I see it at all times. Your life is just, you give me anxiety, dude.
I'm sorry. I wish I was more observant like that. I'm not. What happened was I was like my phone and my keys. Those are the two things I brought. My phone went in my pocket and then the parking ticket went in my other pocket. And I was like, those are my two things. And that's how I just left my fucking keys. Got my two. Gotta go.
Because I understand that. It's like the queue of your important things is usually two. You have and then when you were like, oh, this is a new piece of thing that needs to be kept. Uh-huh. Immediately your brain was like, well, those are the two things now. So the last thing is out, which was your keys.
Yeah. I mean, life is tough. It's absolutely so hard. Whenever I'm like, oh, I'm stressed, I just think about, I went to Mexico recently. It was lovely. I took mushrooms. I did karaoke and I felt free.
So I have a question because I feel like every single thing that I've seen you do and that you've gotten to do and getting to know you for the past few years, I feel like you're someone who's not really thwarted by any sort of professional thing that you have to do. Like, you're not someone who's like no project seems to be, you don't seem stressed out ever. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can do things to where, I'm sure you are, but it doesn't have the appearance that you might just be high all the time. But
yeah, stoned.
I mean, I feel like that's something that I think is just so cool is like, you know, the stress of our industry can be a lot. And I think that it's really cool that every single time I see you, you're doing always like 10 things, but at the same time, you're so, you seem to still just be enjoying it and having fun, not really giving a shit about, you know, the way people feel about it.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I kind of do bounce around life being like, oh, well, this happened. I can't change it. So getting upset about it seems like more work than the return I'm going to get. And I like being busy because then I don't have to think about sad things in my life, like being single. And then I just like to work. I feel like you work hard. I feel like I really got to talk to you. This was years ago in Nashville. Mm-hmm. You had done, I don't know, like 7 shows in the course of like 2 days and sold them all out. And I was like, this is nuts. This is wild. And then you had Stella with you. And it was just, I was in awe of how hard you worked because I was like, I don't know if I can do 7 shows in 2 or 3 days. That's a lot. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, we're different personality types just because you feeling like I love people who are like, well, there's no bother. Sometimes things can happen. It doesn't make sense to stress out about it, but I spend so much time stressing about everything that goes wrong all the time. So
really?
I just
like what? Yeah, I mean, what are you stressed about?
Everything all the time. Like I feel like I have a difficult time like relaxing. You know, like when you say like I did mushrooms and karaoke, like I would have to be forced to do that, or that's something that, you know, I there would be no way that I feel like I could do that unless it was a special occasion. Like I found out I was dying and then I was like, that could be a good time to go do it.
No, you got to do mushrooms before you find out you're dying. Have you done mushrooms before?
I've microdosed. I've had like a bite of a gummy, not even the full micro.
Okay. I'm going to tell you something. I think you should trip on mushrooms. I think everybody should trip on mushrooms at least like 8 times in their life. Maybe 20. I don't really know what the actual number is.
Dude.
But It is so wonderful. You feel so floaty. Every touch feels nice. The like lights start dancing and you like are so happy. I laughed so hard in that bar at nothing.
Well, see, that's what I've heard. That's what I've heard is, and everybody who meets me says you're the prime candidate because you're wound like so tight. You need to mm-hmm. stop this. But my ego gets involved where I'm just like, well, if I want to feel good, I should be able to do it on my own. I don't need something dictating me to do that, which is, I don't know, probably ridiculous, but.
It's not ridiculous. People do like to have control, but like sometimes you just can't make yourself happy, or maybe you need something external to make your internals happy.
Right. And I guess trying to strengthen that pathway of like, if you have mushrooms enough, I'm sure eventually maybe eventually you come to those conclusions more easily as far as being able to find what's joy and things like that.
Maybe I, in the beginning of the pandemic, I may have talked about it on this podcast. I don't remember, but I took a bunch of mushrooms. I gotten mushrooms to microdose. And then I figured out, I was like, oh, if you just take more than three, you trip. So I took like 16 little capsules or like 20 little capsules and then started tripping so hard. And I went outside. This is still when I smoke cigarettes. Rest in peace, cigarettes. I miss them. I love them. I'll never forget you. Big Tobacco had a hold on me. I went outside and I tried to hug a tree because I was like, this tree needs me. And then that made me laugh so hard because I was like, trees don't need you, Nicole. And I had a great time, and I didn't tell my roommates I was tripping until much later. It was my fun little secret.
Well, that you have that personality anyway, that they would not probably have to question if it was mushrooms or not.
Which is funny that you say that, because people constantly are like, are you always drunk? And I'm like, no, this is my baseline.
Yeah.
I'm truly just unhinged.
I can't imagine. Do you get like tame when you're drunk? Does it have like the opposite effect?
A little bit. So I've been told by friends that they like don't know when I'm like in a blackout. I'll be like, I remember nothing. I feel really bad. And they're like, oh, you were just like slightly more wild than usual. So yeah, it's tough to tell if I'm fucked up.
That's terrifying. I know that. Yeah, we did Nashville together, and then we had like, we had the bee incident, and where we got into, I don't know if you remember this, but we had the rental car and we were at the same hotel, even mm-hmm. despite having different show times.
Yes.
So I think your show was the second show, and then I had to do the first show. And then we drove on the way to the venue.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bee that got into the car that wasn't leaving. And so I think you were driving. Yeah, uh-huh. You were driving.
Yes.
And then the bee was like flying around and you're like, you're hysterical
I'm
the
just
whole time.
Screaming the whole time.
And it's translating to how we're swerving on in traffic too. It's not like you're like stationary in your lane and also screaming. And so the bee was very much like in the front of the car. So mm-hmm. I climbed into the back
yes.
of the car and
yes. you're,
and the bee is now resting on the passenger seat and you're screaming.
Just screaming,
you're screaming
so loud for so long.
You're like for so long, the entire time, like the bee,
the whole ride,
got
the
there,
bee
the
wouldn't
first,
leave.
Yeah, it was crazy too because we tried like different windows, mm-hmm. like different windows. I think you had the windshield wipers on at one point.
I had like everything go. It's so funny because I was like, I like vaguely remember the bee story, and then I was just like, oh no, I absolutely remember. That, like, I didn't pull over to the side of the road. I didn't do anything a normal person would do. I continued driving and screaming as this bee was like, oh, I guess I have a loud Uber. Like,
bro.
This Uber driver's out of her mind.
Yeah. Dude, when I climbed into the back, you were like, you get up here.
Yeah, I was like, you fucking left me. You can't just leave somebody. Get back up here. You can't do that.
It was... the best. And then, so when we finally got to, Zany's, we both kind of like, almost like when we pulled up, you know, they like, they were nice enough to like valet the car. But when we pulled up, we like jumped out of either side and, you know, like tuck and rolled at a car that was not moving. And then we were like, you know, you were like, there's a bee. And the guy, you know, some bearded security dude was like, all right, fucking, I'll park it. And then, So we did that. And then we did the shows. And then the shows, it was like, you know, whatever. Like, with the shows, whatever. They're like, between the two of us, it's like a 5 hour, 5 hours long since we got there. And then we drove back, and the bee was still in the fucking car.
The bee was like, I live here now. I'll never leave. We
forgot about it. So the last thing you did when we left the car was had that crazy hysterical scream. And then when we got back in the car, it started.
And then just screamed all the way back to the hotel.
Bro, it was maybe the best night of shows I've ever had before the shows. And that's the thing, is like, you can't tell people during the shows because it's not going to be nearly as funny as it was when it happened. But it's just like, you know, it's just one of those things that, and also we didn't even know that like the bee had this insane reveal where he was like, I'm just going to still hang out here. And for when they come back,
I love a good running joke.
Yeah. I love a good running joke. And the fucking bee just like committed to that. So that I think is probably what bonded us from Nashville. That was pretty wild.
That was so fucking wild. It was so funny. It was just like this normal bee who was just like, I'm a nice guy, but I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, we reacted like like we were like prejudiced. I don't know, like we were prejudiced about it. It was like the bee actually, looking back at it, like for it to just sit there on the seat, it was just kind of like Uber pool a little bit, like we kind of reacted that way.
But that'd
I don't
be
know.
Really funny if you got into an Uber and your driver screamed at you, and then the other passenger just screamed at you and climbed over seats, and you're like, "What did I do? Is this me or is it them? Like, I don't know."
Yeah, I know. Like thinking about it, like it kind of just did a thing. It kind of almost it acted like a fly. It was a bee that acted like a fly. But we were like, no, from what we know, bees have a criminal history. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, but even still, they don't. There's bees that are mostly don't sting. That's, you know,
I think all bees sting.
I mean, all bees sting. I just mean like not all of them are doing it all the time.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Some of them are just here to chill. They're like,
yeah,
that's it. They're just saying hello.
Like, I think like one person got stung like 10 years ago and everybody's like, no, bees sting and you should.
Yeah, bees got a bad rap because they stung one white lady who had a lot to say.
Who deserved it at brunch because
she wanted
to go to the
hive manager and ask why she was stung.
That bitch deserved it. And then the rest of us just reacted because the bee, it flew around like a few times.
Yeah.
And then
kind of stationary.
Yeah. It flew around a few times, which I also think is reasonable considering you were, I mean, yelling. I didn't know somebody could yell like that. That was.
I'm maybe the loudest person I've ever met. I love screaming. I love having a nice time.
Yeah. Well, it would be different if you had a voice that didn't match your personality, which I think it does. But
thank you.
Yeah. But that was such a crazy fucking fun ride. If mushrooms are anything like that, then I'll fucking
do mushrooms. I would say mushrooms are a little bit like that. Wait, Drew, what are you doing in Hawaii?
So I'm in Hawaii. So I have a show here at the Honolulu Theater, I think. Mm-hmm. Honolulu Theater. And so the show's next. Oh, man, this is hilarious. The show will be done by the time this airs. you always forget that. You record like 9 months in advance. So the show went great. Everybody cried and they peed and there were,
everyone was wet.
The right condiments for their french fries. Oh, everything went so well.
I wish I was at that show and not the Batman. Back to the Batman. It's so good. Robert Pattinson, so hot with the mask on. Okay. Zoe Saldana? No.
Wait, Zoe Saldana's in it?
No, no, no. Oh. Kravis. Zoe Kravis.
Oh, Zoe Kravis, yeah. Oh,
she's
yeah.
in it. She's hot. Everyone kind of talks like this. And yeah. that's kind of hot. And then at one point, Batman, I'm not ruining anything. Okay. At one point, he learns that he needs to go to a website and he goes, the clue is URL. And it, I laughed so hard and nobody else in the theater laughed. And then I couldn't stop laughing because nobody else was laughing. But I was like, this man just growled URL. And then the next shot was them typing on the internet.
Wait, so was it supposed to be a joke in
no,
the script? Like,
no, it was okay. not supposed to be a joke, but I was like, a man gravelly saying URL is the funniest thing that can happen in a very serious superhero movie. I couldn't believe nobody. There was another thing that happened that I can't remember where nobody else laughed and I died.
It's the best. My sister does that too. When she laughs, she's just like you. She laughs, and then when no one else laughs, she thinks that's even funnier. It's crazy.
It's so funny when nobody laughs when something really funny happens. I went and saw the Spider-Man movie with Sasheer, and I mean, it's been out. Have you seen it?
Wait.
It's like Spider-Man. I gotta go home. I don't know, it's
yeah,
the third
something
one?
Like that. Something with like, yeah, everything's like it's the neighborhood. Like, you know, Spider-Man 2 is like the neighborhood kid, and the Spider-Man yeah. 3 is like the kid from around the house there in your house. Home.
Yeah.
It's so many. So I think I saw the one where Andrew Garfield was in it and
yes.
Tobey Maguire was
yes.
in it. I actually, yeah, I thought it was really cool.
It was fine for me, but when Tobey Maguire came out, Sasheer Zamata clapped her hands. And nobody else in the theater clapped. And then I couldn't stop laughing that she clapped for Tobey Maguire. And not another person clapped. And I just like couldn't contain anything. And she was so entertained by the three of them on screen together in a way that nobody else in the theater cared.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God. I love when people are excited and nobody else is excited. It just.
That's the best. Especially for when it's like when it's their geek thing, like what, like uh-huh. there's a lot of people that geek over Marvel, and if you're outside of it and you're just if you're just an outsider looking in, you're like, I'm just hoping to see a good movie, or I guess like the Marvel movies are cool, which is how I feel. But my friend who's coming to open the show here in Hawaii, his name's Justin Foster. He is a massive like Marvel fan,
mm-hmm.
and so something like these little breadcrumbs that they drop, where it's like, oh look, they're talking to each other, like that's so much more significant as something like for Zashir or for like Justin than it would be for, you know, mm-hmm. like someone like you or I, where it's just like, yeah, that's cool. I mean,
yeah, I'm watching the Marvel movies now for another podcast, and I don't think I'm a Marvel gal. I think I might just be a Batman gal, because I've seen a bunch of Batman movies and they're all like good. I think I just really like that Bruce Wayne puts on truly just the wildest little outfit, and he's like,
I need to defeat somebody. I'm sad about my dead parents. I will avenge their death.
I love it. I'm here for it.
Does Robert Pattinson, does he do a good job as Batman?
He is the most emo Batman you will ever fucking meet.
Of course.
He's the Batman we need after the pandemic. We're all a little
wow.
sad.
Wow.
Even if you're a superhero, you are a little sad.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm here for it. He's got this like long My Chemical Romance hair.
Wow.
I'm just like here for it. I love it. And then the music is kind of like emo. Drew, get thee to a theater.
I know. I'm in Hawaii and I might. You're actually selling it on me. I might
it's
spend
as
my
if I'm getting
inside.
Paid to talk about this movie, and
yeah,
they have
really
paid me nothing. No one has offered me a part in it. I just can't stop talking about Batman.
That's crazy. Well, the thing is Batman as a hero, as a superhero, he's pretty much the most emo of them anyway,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, Batman's, they've always kind of leaned into that and that, like, darker,
yeah.
like, tone, you know? So, I mean, that always gives me so much anxiety anyway. I mean, Spider-Man, if I were to pick a favorite superhero, Spider-Man would be my favorite, because I feel like it's almost the opposite of Batman mm-hmm. and how buoyant a lot of it is, and it's young and it feels, you know, whatever. But I remember when the trailer for the Robert Pattinson Batman dropped, I was like shocked. I was mm-hmm. like, what crazy casting.
Wild casting. Also, as you watch the movie, you'll go, what year is this? You'll never figure it out. Yeah. Never, ever. You'll say, is it the 80s, the 90s, now, future? What time period? And you'll never know. And I love it.
How often are you going to the movies?
Honestly, not often.
Okay, I don't go that often either.
I want to go more often because it is nice to leave my house and see a movie.
Yeah, that's new. Yeah.
You know, I could go back to that. That's nice. How often are you seeing movies in theaters?
Fucking Mass Shooters ruined it so much for me. And I still hold a grudge against every single one. And
you
how uncreative it is to do it in a movie theater. Like, I don't know. And so I feel burned by that. I'm like, I can't, like, there's places that I just, and I get into, this is the levels of anxiety I feel like I get into, where I'm just like, in my head, I can't go see a movie, because what if it gets shot up? And then I'm like, well, maybe that's where the safest one is, because it's already happened, like, and they're not so hacky that they would do it all the time there. Mm-hmm. But then if there's an experience that I haven't had, like karaokeing in Mexico on mushrooms, then I'm like, well, has a shooting happened there yet? Because I don't want to be the first one, you know?
Oh,
like,
God.
I don't want to be... Yeah, so
this
it's
is
just
levels of anxiety.
That's what I'm saying, man. It goes into itself. Like it plays into, like, here's why you should do something, and here's also why you shouldn't. It's like...
Damn.
It's like having a defense lawyer and prosecuting attorney that are at the mm-hmm. arguing the same thing, which wouldn't make any sense. You wouldn't be able to get anywhere. So, that's what it is. That's why I'm saying, like, I'm fascinated by people like you who are just like, you know, like let life take me. And I'm like, no. I'm gonna I'll let research take me, but I'm not gonna let.
Okay, here's the thing, Drew. I just know in my heart I'm not dying in a mass shooting. And, you know, for everyone listening, you might know someone who might have, and mm-hmm. I'm not trying to make light of it.
No,
I just
not.
Have manifested that I don't see that for myself.
Right.
Same thing with plane crashes. People are afraid to fly. I have been on planes where turbulence is so bad that, like, a flight attendant was literally whispering, I quit. It was like really, 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 really bad. We were trying to go to San Francisco, and we went to land from L.A.
What?
We went to land. We had to go back up in the sky. The plane was literally like a big kid was holding each wing and shaking it as hard as they could. People were puking. It was disgusting. It was like really fucking nasty. But like I like kind of just woke up from my nap because I can sleep through that kind of turbulence. I like woke up and I was like, oh, God, how annoying. But like this plane's not going down. And I went right back to sleep. And the flight attendant was like, you could really sleep through anything, can't you? And I was like, yeah, what am I going to do? Stay awake and like be scared? No, I'm asleep. And if I die in a plane crash, I will wake up right before the death and go, oh, no. Well, good thing I was sleeping.
Fuck. Fucking,
What?
You're the only person I know who sees turbulence as annoying. Like, you're like, that's
what it is. It's a nuisance.
I don't want to be bothered by this. That's fucking terrifying.
The amount of planes that land safely is greater than the amount of planes that go missing
right.
or crash. I still can't believe we're not talking about that Malaysia plane that went down. Or didn't go down.
Know.
It just fucking disappeared.
Disappeared. I
yeah,
know.
Yeah, Drew, I don't see it for myself. Travel with me. You'll never pass away.
I think that's what I want to do. Yeah.
I manifest things. I was with Sashir and this other girl, Keisha. We used to be a 3-person improv team. This is years and years and years ago. We were doing a show in Boston and... I think it was Keisha. She was like, let's take a bus. And I was like, I don't want to get on a bus. Buses break down. So she was like, buses don't break down. They're safe. And I was like, ugh, it's going to break down. We got on the bus. Hour in, broke down.
broke down.
Manifested it.
Yeah.
Didn't mean to. I was just like speaking my truth. I thought they broke down. And then we like rented a car and it was fine. So like, yeah, I'm never going to die in a plane crash. I'm never going to die in like a active shooter situation. It's just not going to happen.
Right. See, that's good. I feel like at my core, I feel those same things,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know how you get to that place where you don't let the editor be the person mm-hmm. that starts to like dictate it. And maybe this is just born from like stand up. And I know that, you know, you and I, we don't talk like a ton about stand up, but like, you know, maybe it's just like, you know, you work that muscle gets so, I don't want to say strong, but that muscle is just used so often mm-hmm. that when you don't stop it from like your professional, you know, life, then like if it translates to your personal life, it might be a huge detriment to being able to experience something like fully. And maybe that's what's happened is just, you know, years and years and years of that and using it as a tool where it's mm-hmm. like, oh, I can edit or I can always complain or I can find the frustration and things like that's great. But when you do that with your life, like I think that can, you know, can have like some unwanted aftermath.
I get that. On that note, we got to take a quick break.
Oh, yeah.
And we're back. Okay, Drew, we've talked about heavy things. We've talked about the Batman. Let's talk about, are you single? I'm pretty sure you're not. I think you've been in a relationship for a minute. Yes, right?
Yes, I have. It's actually why I'm in Hawaii right now. We're kind of like moving our honeymoon to before the wedding. So that's how we're doing.
Oh, that's nice. That's cute. Yeah. So you're doing your honeymoon now. When is your wedding?
The wedding is in June and we're getting married in Vermont.
Ooh, at the Vermont Comedy Club? I'm kidding.
Yeah, at the Comedy Club. So that's where we're getting married. And then just planning it just makes me feel so like... We're totally not taking it seriously at all. Like we're taking the planning seriously, but we're not taking ourselves seriously. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna have like a lot of like silly shit like at our wedding, and I think it's just gonna be a party, and I want people to, we want people to feel like they're having a good time, and that it's not. I get weddings are supposed to be about us, but that's just not like who I am. So,
mm-hmm. Do you have a registry for people to buy shit for you guys?
No.
What?
I know. Like, if they want to get like a nice card or something, give me like do a gift card. Who cares?
How are you gonna get blenders and mixers and fine china and forks, knives, plates, cups?
If anybody gives me that, I'll give it to you. I don't want anything. I don't want anything in my fucking house. If there's things in my house, it's just clutter.
Okay. Oh, so are you like a clean person?
I am just a necessary person. Whatever is necessary, bare minimum. And then my fiance is the opposite. Like she likes to buy things that I only buy things that I need. She buys things that nobody wants. So
fair. I mean, I think a lot of ladies are like that. I've kept so many. So I had like a whole storage unit in Jersey where I just like moved everything because I was like, I'm moving back to New York. I'm never moving back to New York. But I finally emptied it. And I was like going through and I was like, oh, my God, Nicole, there's so much shit in here that you didn't need at the time. And you don't need now. But I was like, better wash all these clothes and keep them all. And now they're just in a pile on my chair because I don't have room for them. So now I have to like go through it again. It's a whole process, Drew.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, it's huge. And it's like it is something that only hindsight can offer, because like I tried to explain this to my fiance. I was just like she wants to keep every bit of memory that's surrounded by it. Like she could take a photo in a shirt. She wants the smell of that day from that shirt, so she won't wash it, and she'll have it in like a section. And and then like she'll have to be reminded that she, like, if I fucking find it somewhere, I'd be like, this should be like, oh, that shirt.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you don't know any of the shit that you have. So so I feel like, you know, I'm a bit traumatized because when I was younger, my mom, she threw away she was someone who like, she threw away things like that she wasn't sure about. And sometimes those would be like school projects or they would be like whatever. And she would just be like, well, I didn't know what it was, so I threw it away. And it was horrifying for me. And now I feel like I've grown in to her a little bit because I understand it now. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, but I don't. Do I need it for today? Probably not. So let's throw it out. And that's probably a very difficult. That's probably a chaotic way.
That's a little chaotic for me.
Yeah.
I love keeping everything. I had my assistant was going through the storage unit. I have an assistant. Can you even? But she was going through the storage unit and then was taking pictures of stuff. And she took a picture of this one glass. And I was like, oh, yes, you have to keep that because it's a window. And when you fill it with milk, it looks like snow. And then she was like, you know what? I have to stop asking about individual things because everything seems to have a wild story.
Very specific. Yeah.
I'm like, that's a Christmas glass. Lots of cheer goes in there. And she's like, I'll just ship it all to you and you can sift through it. And I was like, okay, got it. Thank you.
Yeah. And it's not like you're bettering your case to a logical person. Your argument is zero logic. It's like, no, you don't understand. If you fill it like milk, it looks like snow. And then as if the person is going to be like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. Now I see why you want to keep it.
Why didn't think of that? Yeah.
How did you meet your fiance?
I met her at a bar in Vermont. She ordered an IPA, and I was drinking IPAs the same way that you kick tobacco. I kicked pretty much IPAs. Mm-hmm. And then we had good conversation, and then she got confident enough. I don't know if alcohol or not, but she got confident enough to challenge me in a push-up contest. So, which is ridiculous.
Who won?
I dominated. I didn't even count. That's how confident I was. I was like, I'm not going to count either of us. I'm just going to keep going until you're tired and you don't want to ever date me. So yeah, that was how. And then the early stages of when we were dating, like, she understood that I traveled so much. So she lived on the East Coast. I obviously live on the West Coast. And then we would just, she would fly to see me at some of these shows. So she would, and here's the thing is, like, she was like training for, like, she was like training for Olympics, and like she's been in the world championships for cross country skiing. Like, she's fucking certified badass. So it was pretty cool to, you know, get to talk to her and, you know, get to know, like, what people like Vermont are from, fucking weirdos.
I've never been skiing. I assume you've been skiing.
I'm a snowboarder, so that hurts my feelings.
Snowboarder? That truly seems even harder. Snowboarding seems wild. So your feet are just like strapped to this fucking piece of wood, and then it's just like you can't move your fucking feet. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but it's almost like it's part of you, you know? It's like an extension of, like, yeah, all you do is you manipulate just your toes and heels. It's just, you dance. Like, it's just that. It's dancing on a piece of wood.
Interesting.
And I know that that sounds like twerking. just said.
It's just dancing on a piece of wood. You know, that's how you fuck them. Yeah, that's wild. That's too much. Wait, that's sweet. How long did you guys date before a proposal happened? And then who proposed to who?
I proposed to her December 31st of 2020. So I feel like, first of all, this year, I think, has more weddings than, like, in like 40 years. Like, because, seriously, because so many people, they got through the pandemic together, mm-hmm. and then they were just like, well, fuck, you know, we can do anything, so let's, you know, let's just do this. So I think that's what happened. I think we're probably going to see a lot of divorces, but I proposed to her, and then we dated for, I think, 3 years before, so I think that's a good amount of time.
Okay, yeah. So she challenged you to a push-up contest. Yep. Had any other woman done that, and is that something that I should be doing to men?
I think so. I think, you know, I'm terrible at dating advice, but yeah, do whatever, you know, get, guys are competitive for no reason, mm-hmm. you know, guys are competitive for no reason. It doesn't make sense. Like, there could be, you can make a bet on if someone's going to do something at breakfast. You know what I mean? Like, if that, you're watching other people at breakfast and you're like, oh, I'll bet that guy's not going to tip or whatever. I'll bet that, you know. Mm-hmm. And then other guys will just be like, they're contentious for no reason. So if you start challenging, first of all, dudes, like, dudes are annoying. So I don't, you know, there's, that's, you just have to understand the psychology of that. And then when you can get past that, then fucking whatever. But I just want to apologize ahead of time that if you're single, it's not your fault. It's our fucking fault.
Yeah. It's your fucking fault. I'm fucking perfect. I'll never fucking change. That's what it is. Figured it out. Okay. I have a question.
Okay, yes.
So when you were not in a relationship, did you ever encounter chuckle fuckers?
Yes, but I was like, I was so, I'm not that person who like goes out afterward. Like, you know, I mean, you saw even in Nashville, like yeah. I'm someone who like, I want to get back to the hotel and just be like inside. So if it's a quiet conversation that happens somewhere with someone where we're chatting, like that's cool. But at the same time, I feel like I'm somebody who I do enjoy conversation, and I like if it has like depth, you know, like it, I like to connect with people that way. So, you know, yeah. What about you? Does that? Yes.
I've only had two chuckle fuckers in this whole decade that I've been fucking touring. Two chuckle fuckers, and then on the road I've slept with like one other person who wasn't a chuckle fucker. I have the hardest time. I once went to, I can't remember where I went, but I was swiping on Tinder, and I set up two dick appointments, and then they both fell through. And I later asked this dude, I was like, I know it's been like a week or two, but like, why, what happened? And he's like, oh, I thought it was like really corny that you were like, come to my hotel room. And I was like, ugh. So like, people who just want to fuck, you still have to like go to a bar and like get to know each other and like have a drink. I'm literally just trying to get deep dicked. And you thought it was corny, sir? I was livid. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what are we doing to these men? No, I'm kidding. I mean, it's like nice and fine that he wanted to have a conversation. I was just like, just say that then.
That's so funny. That's so funny. So between the two of us, like, you're the dude. Like, you're the one who's like, just fuck me.
I mean, yes. Especially if I'm in, I don't know, Idaho. Like, when I'm not staying here, let me fuck somebody here in Idaho and get the fuck up out of here. I'm so horny all the time. Sleeping through turbulence gets me going, juiced up. I'm trying to fuck. I just crushed this show. Let me fuck. But I feel like ladies do not get very many chuckle fuckers. And
I've heard that. Like, female comics have like a tough time, and I don't know why. Maybe it's just, I don't know. I'm trying to think like about like the psychology behind like why guys wouldn't want to go to see like a funny, hilarious like female comic and then be like, oh man, that's so, you know, that's so hot. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it just doesn't. I don't know why it doesn't work. I don't know.
I just Googled.
Okay, yeah, yes, definitely. Let's get Google on this.
Do men like funny women?
Ooh, okay, what's Google say?
Google say, wait, so I went to Quora, and that's like a weird website. Okay, so this is from The Independent, a UK thing. Why men don't fancy funny women. Research shows men find women wits a turnoff. Oh my God. Well, maybe that's why.
That's why you're not fancied.
Why I'm not fancied. I'm too funny.
You're too fucking funny, dude. That's why. It's a compliment.
I guess. Why are men not attracted to funny women? Let's discuss.
Yeah. I'm interested in this.
Okay. So a couple years ago, the person who wrote this scored second row tickets to see one of her favorite comedians, Amy Schumer. I immediately asked my then boyfriend to accompany me. He was my favorite person to laugh with. His answer surprised me. She's not very funny. Why don't you ask one of your girlfriends? I was stung. It was second row tickets. He knew how much I loved her. Blah, 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 blah. Sorry, men. Don't find women funny. That's what he said. There it was.
Wow.
This is wild. I mean.
Wow.
I guess I should like read this article and actually talk about it, but whatever.
Well, so then this is my question then. In the two times that you experienced chuckle fuckers, why, like what was different about it? Like what was the vibe?
Well, the one that went well, the only one that went well.
Of the three, yeah.
I was doing a show, and my friend Christy Cello was also on the show. I fucking love her. And she had a tough set. Someone heckled her. She was thrown out. So then instead of just doing my normal material, I did a lot of crowd work.
They threw out Christy? No. Oh, they threw out the heckler.
They threw out the heckler. Yeah, they threw out my friend Christy.
She had a
tough set. Christy, get the fuck out of here, you bombed. No. She just had this heckler lady who wouldn't shut the fuck up. So then I did crowd work, was getting everyone, back up, because it was just the lady really brought the room down. And then at one point I was just I'm so horny. And then I found this couple and I was flirting with them. And then I was I don't want to be the third wheel who is single. And this man in the crowd was I'm single. And then he had an accent. And then he was DM me or I'll DM you. And I was okay. So we DM'd each other. Yeah. And then he came to my hotel room and we fucked and we had some wine and it was delightful.
What was the accent? I think that's important.
He was an Irishman.
Whoa. There it is.
Yeah.
Ireland.
That was nice. And then another one during the show where I was here's my contact info. And then he, I think, turned out to be a homosexual.
Oh.
He could have been bisexual. I don't know. But I figured out his name from his email, looked him up on Instagram. And the first picture he had there was him at a pride parade, just with rainbows all over him. And he could have been an ally. But he also looked at my pussy and was like, I don't think I could eat that. And I was
That's. That's definitely a confirmation. I mean,
yeah,
here's what I'll say. So because I've heard this also from female, comics is that it can get challenging during shows that, nine times out of 10, if you're getting heckled, it will be another female because they get irritated that the attention is on you rather than if they're there with a date or even if they're not, you know what I mean? I've seen a lot of female comics who go up and then if they get heckled, it's almost always a female who's heckling them. And then they will say that, that's why. Is that, do you think that there's any merit to that?
I am usually not heckled by women. Women will interrupt the show to be like, I like you a lot. And I'm like, thank you.
Which is, that's always
gay
great.
Men will love to heckle me to be like, I'm part of the show. I want the attention. Yeah. But straight men heckle me because I don't think, especially earlier in my career, older, 45-year-old, men would have the most to say to me. Mm-hmm. I start off my shows with allowing people to yell nailed it at me because they love saying nailed it during punchlines. And then
that's
I have to be
so
like,
good.
You're being redundant. I know I nailed it. And I don't mind them yelling it at me. So we do it in the beginning. And usually the loudest voice is some man after everyone else has done it is nailed it. I'm like, do you feel better now? Do you feel stronger? Do you feel heard, sir?
So then going back to the the one night stands or what if they weren't.
But
the chuckle fuckers. So the connection with the Irish guy wasn't enough to be let's do this again or let's see each other again.
He lives too far away to ever try to do it again.
Okay.
I'm not trying to get on a plane for some dick. I barely want to get in a car for some dick. I would love to just go up my stairs and have it there. I'm trying to move somebody in my fucking house, my dude.
So then you're not looking for a relationship then? Or you, but just it has a ceiling. It has deal breakers.
Now, I think in my current life, I am looking to fuck a boyfriend.
Okay.
Ooh, took you for a ride there.
It did. It really did.
Yeah, I think I'm really just ready for it. I'm a little bit more stationary now. I don't think I'm going back on the road till next year. So I'm here. I'm ready. I have a couple irons in the fire that I'm working on. I feel this is the most stable I've been in my life. So, and I feel like an adult a lot, Like, I just had my air conditioning, like, replaced. That's an adult thing.
That's an adult shit. Yeah, dude. You got to make phone calls, and they ask you for a window, like, 12 to 4 or 8 to 12.
Then you gotta be home for it.
You got to be home for it.
Talk to them about efficiency, and you go, yes, efficient. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I just think I'm ready. I'm ready for love to come to me.
So, well, here's the thing. You're the queen of manifesting things, so far as I've heard this podcast. So I think it's going to happen for you, like, very soon.
Drew, thank you.
I think it's going to happen for you very soon. I think, like, you know, you let the universe know. You're like, hey, I'm ready. I'm stable. The timing's perfect. That could be great.
Thank you. I also feel like it might be coming to me.
Yeah.
I'm too horny to not be rewarded with a good deep dickin' or a good finger hookin'.
Yeah, I love when you say those terms. You really learned a lot from that Irish dude. There's nothing that sounds more Irish than what you just said.
A finger hookin'.
It sounds like folklore.
It does.
Do you? So, okay, you're in your description, in the description of your podcast, by the way, one of the best ones I think I've ever seen. It says that you love giving blowjobs.
Love.
Now, I'm sure you've talked about this, but can I hear this straight from you?
Yes.
Like, what? I'm fascinated by this.
Okay. I know a lot of ladies do not like giving them. I love giving a blowjob. I will say I just had some dental work done that has really hurt. Like, I can't, like, open my mouth as much as I want. And I said to the dentist, I was like, when will this swelling go down? I have to open my mouth for things. And she was like, what do you mean? And I was like, I have to open my mouth for things. And she went, oh, it should go down soon. And I think we were on the same page. Or she's like, oh, she screams a lot, which is, you know, true as
also
well.
Also true, yeah.
But it's like gotten back to better. It's
that
good.
Works.
So, okay. So one of my favorite things, I like to please people. So, like, I like going down on somebody and then, like, looking up and then being like, do you like it? And then they're like, yeah. And, like, the subtext is, like, keep going. But then you kind of just stare at them and you make them want a little bit more. And then you start going again. And then you just, like, figure out fun things to do with your tongue. And then, like, sometimes you, like, make a suction. And then that's fun, too. And then, like, switching it up while you're, like, looking up at the person. That's, like, very sexy for me.
So it's like a photo shoot. You feel like you're being, it feels like, yeah.
Yes, I'm being, like, captured with the eyes, and you're watching me perform. Oh, my God, I like sucking dick because it's performing.
I'm glad. This is so therapeutic.
That was therapeutic.
Yeah.
This is wild. I cannot believe I never made that correlation.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's
that
what it is. You're a
so
performer at
funny.
Heart.
Funny. The dick is my mic, and I'm deep throating it.
Yeah, yeah. You're killing it.
Wow.
And the dick is standing, so that's somewhat of an ovation.
It is somewhat of an ovation.
Yeah, yeah. It's all really coming together. I'm not a very sexual person. I'm not It's just physical touch is not my love language.
Fair.
You know, mine's acts of service and words of affirmation. You know, those are you know, that's how I feel loved. But my fiance, hers is physical touch, and how much I love her. I love that I get to communicate with her that way. You know what I'm saying? But it's been something that the reason I brought this up to you is because, you know, she's the same way that you are, where she's like, I love giving. And I was like, you don't need to lie to, like, satiate me. Like, that's, you know what I mean? So I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to tell you your truth, but I don't want you to have to, you know, feel like you're lying for the purposes of whatever. And she's, I think, still very sincere. So it's just, you know, that's one of those things that baffles me, especially when you hear so many women who they're like, I don't it at all.
It confuses me when people are like, I hate it. And I'm like, but why?
Well, they're not performers.
Why?
They're not performers. They don't know.
Yeah, they're not performers at heart.
Weak ass writing in their
blowjobs. Yeah, yeah. Real quick, we have to take another break. Speaking of performing, let's talk about it. When did you start performing? When did you know you wanted to be a comic?
I never did. I always loved watching stand up. When I was a kid, I watched everybody. I loved like Chappelle and I loved like Ellen and I loved, I even watched Dane when I was younger. I watched Tosh. I watched, the Blue Collar Tour. I loved like Ron White. And so I watched everybody. And that was a way that like my dad and I would bond was like stand up. So, but when I moved to LA, it was to just do acting. Like that was my whole shit. I went to performing arts high school, performing arts middle school. I just loved it. I wasn't great at sports. And so when I started to do shows, like that was my thing. Like I just loved it. And then my injury happened when I was 20. So I had this. So for people who, I guess people who don't know or whatever, I can retell it. But like I was working at a comedy club. I was working at Flappers in Burbank. Uh-huh. And that was the perfect night job for when I moved there. Like, because for when I moved there, I was just trying to have my days free to audition and do shoots and shit. So I was like, oh, I can have a night job and I'll be around comics. Like, that's fucking so perfect. So they had a softball team, and I won one of the games. I went to like field a grounder, and it hit me in the throat, and then I fell and hit my head. And I thought, like, nobody really thought anything of it. People were like, oh, that looked bad, but it didn't look like holy shit. Mm-hmm. That would you know, fuck shit up. So I had to work later that night, but then they were like, you seem like out of it. So just go home and like sleep it off. And then when I woke up the next day, my speech was really, really slow. I was talking, but I wasn't making a lot of sense. And I don't even remember that day. That was just something that my roommate told me that I just wasn't myself. So he took me to the hospital, and then they were like, yeah, you had a major concussion and a vocal contusion. But for the most part, they weren't able to deduce why I was like stuttering. And it wasn't even like, it was almost slower than stuttering. It was like every single word that I was saying was like staccato and like broken up. It was so, and my motor skills were not all there. So that long story to say this story is my agency and my manager for acting, like they all dropped me. So
what?
I had like, yeah, they all dropped me. I had callbacks lined up for like Mad Men. I was doing stuff for Disney. Like I was like in the thick of it for only after like a year and a half of being in LA. Like I had some good momentum. And I think that's because, you know, I looked so young and like my agent knew how to like market it. So it wasn't necessarily that they were as curt as saying, ew, you're fucked up. We can't represent you. But they did say, like, well, come back when you get better. And I was told that my speech especially was going to get better after, you know, at about, like, they told me about 2 weeks to whatever, 2 weeks or a month, and then it'll get better and with some speech therapy. And then, you know, here we are 10 years later, and, you know, it's obviously much better, but I've had to change so many things. Like I've had to go to physical therapy, like physical rehab, and I've had to do speech therapy. I've done like therapy to talk through like the fucking trauma of it. I've had to change my diet because after you have like a traumatic brain injury, it's called a TBI, you're supposed to switch your diet to like high fats and low carbs so your brain can heal itself. So, you know, in the past few years, my speech has gotten much better, but it's just that whole trajectory was why I got into stand up. I got into stand up because no one would hire me, and then I had some comics who were like, use it as your pain, bro. Talk about the fucking pain of it. So that was the whole trajectory.
Damn. That is fucking wild.
Yeah, I know I rushed through that story, but I just told it so many times.
I get it, and I knew you talked about it so much, so I was like, I mean...
Nah, that's okay. That's
but
okay.
Yeah, it is, like, fully fucking wild that happened at, like, a softball game. Like, I think we forget that, like, one thing can just change your whole life, but also it's, like, it changed your life for the good, you know?
Yeah, there was definitely some lessons to have been learned there. I have some control issues. Like I have, you know, I have a tough time like giving up control mm-hmm. with of things, you know, and I was already that way prior to the injury. And then the injury happened and was like, you know, here's a lesson for that. You're not always in control all the time. Mm-hmm. And you have to learn that. And there is strength in overcoming that. But then it came around to where, you know, it gets to this point where when you start to get some traction in your career,
yeah.
then all of a sudden then everything comes back. You're like, shit, now I care about this. I have to control as much as I can about this. And then, you know, life is just, it's fickle in that it wants you to learn those lessons. And sometimes when you forget about them or you come back to them, you have to rework through that. So, you know, it's exciting to me that you said for your life, you're in a place where you're like, oh, I'm feeling more adult. I'm feeling more like I'm comfortable with where I am, and I have this balance of work and fun, and that for me has been, especially I think the perspective we got from the pandemic, I think has really brought that into my life as well, where I'm just feeling more like, you know, I don't have to do 13 shows in, you know, on a, yes. you know, in a fucking weekend to validate myself or my mm-hmm. injury. You know, there's a lot more human things. Like, you know, I even see like you have stuff where you post where you're like, you're dancing or you're like, you're pole, you know, you're, mm-hmm. you do pole classes. And I think like, you know, that shit's inspiring because it's like I do soccer now. Like I never did, like I never had like a thing. Every person who ever asked me about a hobby, it was always
you're like comedy.
Yeah, it's it. And to be honest, I hate that. Like I don't even so much like the vibe that is around comedy for mm-hmm. as much as I love comedy. You know, like I love the writing and the editing and the performing part. But, you know, when it comes to like hanging and trying to
be cool.
Yeah, it's like there's
get friendly with certain people, get booked on certain shows. That's truly exhausting and like another job.
It's not honest. It's mm-hmm. not honest. Like I it's not who I am. Like I'm somebody who I'm a genuine person and I care about people, but I don't ever want it to feel like I care about something or I'm inquiring about something because I need it, you know, mm-hmm. or because I'm trying to get somewhere further. Even though I want it to be on the merits of my hard work, not, you know, whatever.
Not like who you know and who likes you best or whatever.
Right. So that part, you know, it's just politicking and I feel like I'm too transparent for it to feel honest for me. So I have to navigate that a little bit. But I think just coming down to, you know, like we're talking about, it's just like being comfortable with where you're at, trusting mm-hmm. and manifesting, you know, more positive things for yourself, I think I think that's a really, really healthy way to approach it. So
I think so too. How did your life change? I mean, we do have to wrap it up, but I'm curious how your life changed after being on America's Got Talent, because that's like a huge fucking show. It's network. Millions of people fucking watch it. So like after it aired, how did your life change?
Yeah, I was really busting my ass doing colleges. Like, you know, we talk about right now, like how many shows I was doing when I met you was definitely a lot. But mm-hmm. the year before I did AGT, I made it a goal to do 500 sets.
Oh,
I was
just
like,
God.
Yeah. I was like, I'm going to do 500 sets because I want to get comfortable in every environment. So I was doing them everywhere. So when I got on the show, you know, that show is just, it does have such a massive reach. Or it did. I don't know if it still does. But it did at the time. And then, you know, that definitely made it to where I could start doing clubs and I could start touring and I didn't have to just rely on like colleges or in town shows. However, you still had to like grind to build your social presence or your mm-hmm. online presence and stuff like that, you know, which has become even more prevalent in recent stand-up years. But for me, you know, I think when I got done with the show, I only had like, I don't know, like 65 or 70,000 subscribers on YouTube. And for me, I was like, I want to make that the main vehicle for my stand-up and for when I was doing of my vlogs with my dog Stella. And so then, you know, that was the main vehicle for how I continued to afterwards. Like, I could tour and people would buy some tickets for people who saw AGT, but it wasn't to where it was like pushing it over the top to where you were like selling out or adding shows and stuff like that. That was that I had to kind of like create through, you know, cultivating the stuff through YouTube. So we're at, you know, since then, you know, it's, you know, we've gained like 2 million subscribers, which, you know,
holy
that
shit,
has been the that has been the big reason for why people will come to see shows. And I'm almost happier to know that someone found me from like either Facebook or YouTube, because that's content that I generated, you know, rather than, you know, that's stuff that I generated on my own. But for me, it was really cool after AGT to have like, you know, people want to come see me. And then I was so young when I did that show that it's cool to try and, like, you know, evolve into more adult things and talking about more adult things and not talking so much about my speech or making jokes about my stutter and stuff like that. Like, you know, like I said, it's just about being honest with where you're at. And I know that sounds like fucking artsy or whatever, but I just mean, you know, that's been what's cool about it.
Well, I think that's awesome, because it is disingenuous if you like aren't having, if your stutter isn't as prevalent and isn't affecting your life as much, it's like, then why am I still making jokes about that?
Exactly.
Why not evolve to the person I am now? And that is like, I really identify with that, because after my special, I was like, well, I am a horny single lady, but also I'm horny for love. And I've been like trying to figure out what that means to me and means to my stand up, because I never want to just be like inauthentic or like have people go, Jesus Christ, this is all she fucking talks about. Because it's like, well, there are different facets of me. I got to figure out which one I want to show.
Yeah.
Stand up is, it's just interesting.
It is. I mean, and it is interesting because you can find that market, like that is very niche. However, people are identify with it, or there's so many people, there's so many comics who they're talking about one thing that's so specific to them, and so many people relate to it that they're sometimes afraid to leave it. Yeah. And for me, you know, I've had to talk about this like in therapy, where it's just like, I went from hating the way I talk so much that I would make jokes about it, to then people knew that's all they knew me for, to then feeling like, oh shit, is that all they're going to know me for? Mm-hmm. So I can't evolve from it. And then to where people had accused me of it not being real in the first place. So then I'm like, no, do I have to feel like I could never grow from it? Or can I, you know? And then it all just boils down to, inauthentic is such a great word, because it's never something it's never gonna feel good, and it's never gonna translate in what you're trying to do. And I hopefully think people appreciate someone who evolves more rather than just doing, you know,
the same bullshit,
you know,
over and over and over, like repurposed material. Yeah, I have like a couple of jobs where I had to like cancel shows, but then also I was like, maybe we just like regroup and figure out what I want to talk about. And I think, I don't know, I think in life we can all just like learn to like take a minute. I think that's like with the pandemic, like not to, like, I know I come from a very privileged place where I was able to not work and or podcast and still, you know, make a living or whatever. But like, I did do less. And as like things have opened up and we're back out there doing things, I have to keep reminding myself, I do not need to say yes to everything if it's not going to bring me joy or move my career in a way that I'm trying to have it move. And then also, people can wait. They can wait till you have the material that you're like happy to show them, as opposed to something you've like cobbled together. Just, you know, give me your money. And that feels grimy to me.
So. Yeah, it feels incomplete, and it feels like there's no purpose. I mean, you can just go in circles then if you're just saying yes all the time. And I think the way you're doing it right now, especially if you're not doing shows until next year, and you're just kind of, you know, you're working on the things that you want to work on where you're at, and also growing personally. It feels like the more that you can, you know, grow personally, the more like opportunities otherwise come to you professionally as well, because then you're just, you know, you're manifesting that same, like, you know, that same kind of growth. But I would say the challenge is with our industry, you do have to book shows well in advance, you know? So you're almost like, well, what's the mental place I'm going to be at 6 months from now, you know?
Yeah. That's why, like, 2019, I burnt myself out, like, boy, oh boy, I've never been more tired, because I was like on sets working. I wrote a book and I was touring almost every weekend. But by like the end of it, I had like, I remember like November of 2019, I had some of the best shows of my life, and I was like happy and like fulfilled with what I was talking about. And then the pandemic hit, and then I was like, well, I can't do all of that material. I have to. So then I started like cherry picking things that I was like, this is what I still want to talk. It has just been like a real interesting journey these last 2 years.
I completely agree. I think, and I know that it does sound like you can come from a privileged place if you say that it was a blessing, because it wasn't a blessing to everybody. That's not everybody's relationship with it. However, I was in the same position in 2019 where it just got to be so much. I was never in a position to say no to things, and then you just get you get taken advantage of by your own, you know,
by yourself,
your own
being
self.
Like, I have to do this. I have to keep grinding. If I don't do it, someone else will. And it's like, it's okay if someone takes that weekend. It's okay if you take the weekend for yourself. Big about self-care in 2022, baby.
I know, right? I know. It sounds so LA to fucking talk about, but it's you know, but it is real. And I, you know, I'm so happy with all of the things that you're getting to do. You're getting to do so many like different projects, and like, it's really cool to see that you're also at a place that you've got some personal wants as well, and some things that you're doing for yourself. So that's really cool.
I want a partner. Well, Drew, we are winding down. I had stopped asking this question, but I miss asking it. So I think I'm going to start doing it again. Would you date me?
You know, I am in a relationship. But is that something that I am removing from this?
Yeah, I guess. I guess it's like a, if there were no restraints, no one in your life.
In a world?
Yeah, in a world.
I absolutely would. And here's why. I think we would be a fucking, I think we would be the oddest couple ever. Like, provided I never met my current fiance, I think we would be like friends that hung out all the time, and people like, and people be like, and I think they date too. And then I would slowly start to, I would get satisfaction out of knowing people would be like, well, how do they do it? But then we would never talk about it. Yeah, we would never talk about it. We'd just be like, yeah, that's my girlfriend. Or I'd be like, yeah, that's my, we date and stuff. And then we would do shows, and then we would have posts sometimes on Instagram, and they would be like, and then, you know, it would be like, if it was like my birthday or whatever, and you post on Instagram, you were like, it's, you know, love this man. It's my boo's birthday or whatever. I feel like people would be like, so they're serious.
This doesn't make sense.
We never talked about it on stage. We never talked about each other on stage. We would never be like, it would never be like, yeah. And we would never talk about like our differences on stage. We would talk about just like, and people would be like, they have to say something at some point. There's no way that they cannot talk about it, because you're taller than me. We cannot be, you know, your personality is so different than mine. Like we could not be more opposite. And I just think people would be like, how the fuck does that work? And so despite that aside, like, I think, yeah, you're such a cool person, and you're going to find your person this year. That's That's what's going to happen. I know it.
Yes, from your lips to God's ears to some big dick. Yum, 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 yum. Okay, Drew, do you have anything that you want to promote before we get out of here?
No, this airs when all my touring is pretty much done, but I start up touring again in the fall, so just drewlynch.com, that works.
And Concussed, which can be streamed on YouTube.
Yes.
Okay, if you like this episode of Oh, Why Won't You Date Me, you can like it, you can rate it, you can subscribe, give me 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, and if you write me a dirty message hitting on me, please send it to whywon'tyoudatemepodcast@gmail.com, and I will read it. Okay, this dirty message from this nice person said, hey, bacon sweat, check out the dumpster on your baby. Oh, the dumper on you, baby. Oh, my butt. Okay, you can call me the chef because I want to spread your legs like butter and sling my sauce up your down south mouth. Ugh. Then we can go to the farm because I'm going to roll you over, shove my hog in your mud pit. I want to milk your fun bags like ripe balloons and make you choke on my man butter. You know? All right. That was a message. Thank you so much.
Are you kidding me? That was so well written. That was perfect. That's the dude.
All right.
That's the dude.
If whoever wrote this, please contact us again. You're my dude, and I'm going to marry you.
That was perfect.
Bye-bye.
That's it for Why Won't You Date Me with me, Nicole Byer. Why Won't You Date Me is produced and engineered by... oh, the sweetest woman I know, Marissa Melnick. It is executive produced by other wonderful people, Adam Sachs, Joanna Solotaroff, and Jeff Ross. Thanks for listening. I love you. Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you next Friday with a brand new episode. What a treat. What a dream.
This has been a Team Coco production.